Hello, welcome back to Country Roads Confidential here at earsports.com, part of the 24/7 Sports Network. Today is December 11th. Significant because in a Wednesday, not too far away, one of the most wonderful days of the year. Not Christmas. Recruiting season kicks off with the start of the early signing period. Presents for fans and coaches alike with the still kind of new December period, which has now made the February period no longer cool. It's changed the landscape. It's kind of added life to the postseason and almost made the postseason completely non-existent now. There's no bridge anymore between the end of the season and that weird period between your final game in February, because it's active and you're signing players and coaching changes, shake the trees, all new players fall out. It's kind of made recruiting a prolonged business, which is all still very new to me, even though I've been here for going on 3 years, but I can't talk intelligently about this by myself. But I have a man who can help me. My tag team partner, Chris Anderson. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. When are we going to bring in the intelligent person? And how will he help us?
Yeah, we're 0-2, I guess, right? This one. All right, yeah. I tried to tee you up, but okay, that's fine. We tend to disagree on who's smarter when it comes to stuff like this, but I guess, okay. We're 0-2. Basketball we can cover. I feel let down because we pivoted to basketball last week and they promptly went out and lost a game. So I don't know. That's like the alley-oop to Shibuya that it was there to get dunked and they just blew it and couldn't get it. And now the ball's just rattling around for a while because home games that they should put in the bag. And then you got a game against Youngstown State, which I think will be tricky for a couple of reasons. And then pretty much you're in wait-and-see mode and they're just going to kind of be a rock tumbler for a couple of weeks until they go up to Cleveland to play Ohio State. If it's okay with you, we'll get to basketball, but we'll do that in the latter half. Is that all right?
Yeah, that sounds good to me because I'm with you, and I loved the Oscar not dunking analogy because that drove me nuts in that game at Madison Square Garden, and apparently Bob Huggins too, because I think that was a big reason that he got put on the bench pretty early in the game.
Not only that, he said that was kind of when the game swung too, because they could have opened up to a 7-point lead, and it goes back, and instead of a 7-point lead, it's a 2-point lead because they get an and-one, and the game is on there. And it's funny how coaches can pick out singular moments from games but also can't remember sequences of events, too, when a reporter asks them a sharp question, too. It always amazes me, the selective memory, but I do agree with them there, too. Anyways, we'll go to that end of the court in the latter half here, but we are heating up. The first day of the December signing period is a week from today, and a lot of hustle right now. I don't know what the word is, scrambling or double-checking or scratching or reaching, and maybe you can fill this in better for me, but it does seem like good news, more than bad news or unexpected news, but and perhaps more on the way that we don't yet know about. But set the table here. Big weekend coming up and a big stretch for West Virginia and their recruiting efforts.
Yeah, the final two, I guess, postseason weekends were right in the middle of them. Last week was the first one. There were at least seven official visitors on campus. Coaching staff picked up one commit. We saw the Let's Go tweet. That commitment has not gone public. It might go public later today. And then this weekend, there are a handful of other visitors coming in, a couple JUCO guys that I'd keep an eye on, a couple high schoolers that are uncommitted, several guys who are already committed, and even a transfer. I guess we'll start there. Chris Blake. I'm still unsure of how to pronounce his name, Bleich, for those who want to Google. Transfer from Florida, offensive tackle, grad transfer guy, eligible immediately, who would enroll in January. He's taken other visits, so it's not a sure thing by any means. Pittsburgh, Syracuse, Maryland, a couple other schools are in the picture. But guess who has two senior starting tackles that are going to be gone and have a wide open spot for a grad transfer tackle. So it makes a ton of sense for West Virginia to be going after him. It makes a ton of sense for a grad transfer to be interested in West Virginia. So the marriage of the two makes sense, but we'll see if they can kind of close the deal this weekend. I think that's the biggest thing for me that I'm going to be watching, even though there are going to be some other big names on campus.
Where do you stand on postgraduate transfers or junior college transfers on the offensive line in year one, because that's such a position that requires repetition and familiarity with, you know, your teammates, your running backs, your quarterback's cadence, the guys next to you, that you can, you may have, you know, 45 starts to your career, but none on the campus you're about to get to. You may have a lot of experience in college football and practice and all the stuff that you need to know and experience to be good, but it's at some other school. And I always wonder, what's the risk reward there?
I'm with you. Heck, I think we saw it this year with John Hughes, who was a junior college transfer, but a late out guy, or early out guy, I guess, technically, since he was supposed to still be in junior college this season, but didn't get to campus until May. And I think most everyone agreed that he was talented enough to play at this level and was ready, but things just didn't gel when he kind of got thrown out there. And so I think he then had to take a step back to a backup role and will work his way back up, I imagine. But it's got to be a problem. For me, I don't want to say I'd completely rule out the idea of a transfer on the offensive line that you're expecting to start and bringing him in the summer, but certainly having the spring helps. And Blake would get there in January, go through all the spring to be able to try to get those reps with that first team or second team, however he's going to fit in on the team, and figure out where he would work and if he can kind of gel with the rest of the unit.
See, I kicked that one. It was rolling out of bounds, and you jumped on the loose ball and made it work. That's a good point, Tim. And if you get him in here, forget spring too. I mean, the winter workouts, and that's a lot of time where you get to know guys, you can watch film and get terminology and all that. That certainly helps too. You saw the crystal ball news from our colleague Brian Doan. Three names in for West Virginia. He's about a 90% success rate on his crystal ball, so this is heating up a little bit. But tell us a little bit about what to expect and how you think this may turn out for West Virginia.
Yeah, so I actually spoke with Brian earlier on Tuesday, and we talked about these picks. He was asking me some questions. I checked with my guys. He checked with his guys, because obviously Brian's got connections all over the place, and I think he was getting information from various places, and I checked in Morgantown, and it all kind of jives. It all goes together, and I think Tariq Stewart, I believe I'll have to double-check it here as we're talking. I believe I already put in a crystal ball for him, so that one was not surprising. Junior college offensive tackle. For me, originally, when he was first being recruited, I assumed he might be a backup plan because that he was a May guy, that just like we were talking about, a late spring graduate arriving in the summer. So I assumed that the staff might be asking him to hold on. And his early comments backed that up when he told me that the staff had asked him not to take visits until January because they needed to see where things stood with once they got done with the first signing day. And then last week he told me that the coaching staff reached out, asked him to come in early and maybe even sign early. So we'll see where that goes from there. I like West Virginia's chances, assuming they'll take him at this time. And Jordan White, the offensive lineman from DeMatha High School, former Maryland commit. He's the young man who decommitted from the Terrapins when they were down 50 to Ohio State or whatever it is in the second quarter.
Right.
Went right on social media and decommitted. And the coaching staff reached out right away. And he is going to come up for a visit. He's looking at Syracuse. He's looking at West Virginia and a couple other schools. So I think when you have these kind of situations, these kind of quick turnarounds where a guy decommits from somewhere and then locks in on a visit like Jordan White is with West Virginia just 3 days before signing day, you have to think there's a good reason for that. And, you know, I think the only thing for me is, how many spots are there on the offensive line right now? Because I was looking at it as one, maybe two, and now all of a sudden there's three offensive linemen who at any given time could be takes in Stewart, White, and the aforementioned grad transfer from Florida. So this is the part – that's the part that's new for me. You know, I've been doing this for a decade, but my time has basically lined up from the start of the Dana Holgorsen era. And throughout that entire tenure – when you got to these visits in December and January, they really only brought in their top targets. Only the guys they would take right there without question. And they would visit like their option A guys. And if they didn't commit on the spot or tell them they were going to, Then the following weekend, they would bring in option B or option C or what have you. This time around, there's only a handful of spots, yet they're bringing in option A, B, and C all at the same time and going to figure it out when it gets there, which, like I said, is new to me. I'm interested to see where it goes. I have a general idea of a pecking order. I've spoken with people about what it might be, but I could see there is a situation. It has not been ruled out that all three of these guys could end up at West Virginia.
Ooh, a lot to pin there, and I want to come back to some stuff too. But the one guy I want to talk about is Akeem Mesidor.
Yeah,
because I think that they're close to having a very good defensive line next season, but they're also close to losing a number of guys following next season too. Stills, Pooler, perhaps both Stills. Maybe just a complete turnover. So I understand getting young is good too. So Mesidor would be good. Obviously Sean May is good. Quay Mays is a junior college player. So you have some young and old in there too, but it seems to me like if they can find an old guy there, a postgraduate guy, or maybe a bounce back junior college guy, which the competition is tough for, I guess. Is there a prospect there to add there? Is there room? Is there a player? And am I mistaken that is a plug and play situation?
I feel like Yaya Diaby was the guy that they liked there, junior college, first team All-American. But unfortunately, it doesn't look like that's going to work out. I think they made their run at him, but it wasn't something that's going to happen. He ended up visiting other programs, and last I checked with him, he had canceled his visit to West Virginia and was not rescheduling. I think he was the top target. Mm-hmm. There is Justin Jackson from Northwest Mississippi, which West Virginia fans should be very familiar with over the years. He's currently committed to Colorado, was supposed to come in last weekend, but his mother was sick, and they kind of, you know, a mutual agreement between Jackson and the staff to let's wait till next weekend because, one, obviously go take care of your mother, help her out, and two, the staff wants the mom there too. Everybody wants mom's seal of approval. Everyone knows that's the key. Mm-hmm. And if Jackson's coming in for a visit and mom's not with him, kind of defeats the purpose. So he'll be coming in this weekend. He's someone I would also keep an eye on. But Mesidor, the way his body is, he might be a guy, even though because Jackson's a junior college guy, as I mentioned, Mesidor's is high school, but he's also a little older. He is 19, I believe, already. This is kind of like a prep year almost for him. So physically, he's a little more advanced than your typical high school senior. And skill-wise, he can still, you know, he's still got a lot of upside. So that is a huge pickup if it happens. And I think they made him a priority all the way back in the summer. They got him in June. They were hoping to get his commitment because they thought he was going to blow up with 20, 30 offers. He did. And somehow this might be, if he commits, from my perspective, sorry to go off on a tangent here, but that is one of the great pickups in this class because that is so hard to do, to have a guy visit and then have him sign 6 months later without him ever visiting again.
Wow.
Yeah. He's gone to UCLA, which obviously has its perks, Syracuse, which is close to his home in Canada, and other visits. And he's still coming back to saying, I want to go to West Virginia if that happens. Again, we're assuming here a big solid crystal ball from Brian Doan, and I'm hearing equally positive things. So that would be probably the biggest coup from this class.
I am going to keep my postgraduate player idea in mind because Mesidor, who knows, right? Maybe good news. But the junior college guys don't know, competitive for their services, I'm sure. It's hard to get those guys because the good ones don't like to stay down south or end up in the elite programs because they're that important. Obviously, getting the quarterback in the ground is an important thing. But, man, you find good players in that defensive line crop that pop up, you know, after graduation, after spring football. And I just feel like if they can add even like a Reuben Jones again, that would be a great thing for just to continue the development there. Not a guy who's going to come in. I don't think you want to find a starter necessarily. But if you can add depth and keep that rotation robust, you know, with eight guys, they really could have something there to build their defense around.
No, I'm with you because I think I was, well, all our listeners, depending on when you hear this, will be reading later today, Wednesday, is I did a kind of a breakdown of where West Virginia sits with scholarships. And I remember thinking when they kept offering and going after defensive ends and defensive linemen in this class, that, hey, I think they're okay. They're going a little overkill, aren't they? But they're really not. Like you said, there are some top-end talent, guys that we know are good. Right. Stills, Pooler, Alston, the other Stills. But it's conceivable that all four of those guys might be gone. I mean, that's a redshirt senior, redshirt junior. And who's to say at least three of those, maybe four of them, are gone after next year? And then what are you with? And after that, you got the only one on the roster with experience is Jordan Jefferson.
Right.
So it gets pretty thin after that. So you really need to add a couple more guys to this class and build up some depth.
Circle back to your conversation about the offensive linemen and how much room is there for how many players. This is a volatile time of the year, and this is going to anger people because we just can't give too many details. But we're in transfer season. The semester at West Virginia ends next week. So, you know, kids are going through their final week of class. Finals are next week. And it's move out time too, where, you know, kids are not going to come back and go to spring football because they've had enough here. You'll find people who go through spring football and say, no thanks after that. But a lot of them want to get in to be in spring football at their new school. And the sooner you're in the portal, the sooner you're out, and the sooner you sign paperwork to go somewhere else too. So I sent you a list yesterday of, let's say, a sourced list of names. Is that fair?
Yes.
Yeah. And some pretty recognizable names that we hear to keep an eye on. And again, this is going to make people mad. I understand that. But the angle I'm coming from here is that it covers a lot of areas of the team, offensive line, running back, receiver, quarterback, stuff like that, where they might need replacements. And you're talking offensive line and how many players there are. And you saw the list of players. The need could expand there.
Yeah, it matches up.
Yeah, how crazy is this time of year when you don't know who's going to join your class, because you also don't know who you're going to invite to your class, because you don't know who's going to stick around from your current roster.
Yeah, I think that's why this move by this staff, where they're bringing in options A, B, and C, and everybody, their backups. And they, don't get me wrong, I am under the impression that they would feel comfortable taking any of these recruits' commitments at this time. The problem is, it's just a numbers game. You can't take them all. If they could take 35 kids, I bet they'd take every single kid that's visiting last week in this one. They have the talent to play at West Virginia. It's just a matter of, hey, we can't take five offensive linemen because we need a fourth defensive lineman or a linebacker or whatever. So I think this is the good strategy, is to get these guys on campus and figure it out, because you're going to need, with this, as you mentioned, with this semester coming to an end at about the same time as this official visit weekend and as about the same time as signing day, you're going to need almost every single day to make these choices of how much space you got and what positions you need because of this transfer portal situation.
Headline on our website, constant decommits, which is bad news if players are constantly decommitting. I don't think we want to get into that, but this actually meant one player whose last name is Constant, running back from New York. He decommits. Not sure how much of a surprise it is. In fact, it sounds like the fact that he committed might have been more of a surprise than he decommitted, but that was a guy that they really liked back in the fall and were extremely confident, along with Sean May, by the way, that they were going to get, and they did. And things change, of course, and let's not get into that, but there was a need for a running back. There isn't a running back in the class. You have Letty Brown, you have Tony Mathis. Alex Sinkfield played receiver at the end of the season. That may be permanent. Martel Petaway could be back, but could be done here. Who knows? We've reported on that for a long time now, but is there room, is there need for a running back, and where do they go from here?
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I feel like you have to get at least one, right? Got it. For all the reasons you just mentioned. That is like a one is the absolute minimum for me at this point. Like if Singfield has moved permanently, that's you're down to what would you just say? Brown and Mathis, and that is it, more or less. And perhaps Fedaway. But I'm not counting on that. I don't know if you are, but if Constant's out, which he is at this point, what are you left with? And right now the board's not very long. Tim Baldwin was a guy that West Virginia got in on very early, phased out, on the previous staff. Both went their opposite ways. Baldwin ended up committing to Michigan. Then a lot of his offers disappeared. He decommitted from Michigan and then put West Virginia in his top three recently. But I hadn't heard anything about his contact with the staff other than a quick unofficial visit last month. And then he commits to Indiana this week. So we'll see if he actually makes a visit or not. He was scheduled to come this weekend. At last check, he said he was not. But you never know this time of year. I would say LaDainian Webb, junior college running back, is a guy to keep an eye on. Second team All-American. Staff went down there and visited him last week, offered him, former Ole Miss commit. So he is definitely someone to know. Right now, no word on a visit. I'm still thinking it's a possibility, maybe even a likelihood that he kind of sneaks onto campus this weekend, but he has not confirmed that at this time. So... But once you get after that, J.J. Davis down in Bluefield, but he's from the way he's talked, he told me personally that most schools are just kind of asking to see his transcripts at this point. I have to think that maybe that means some academic concerns that he might not be eligible. Kenny Tracy from out in Indiana, another guy that went from claiming a lot of Big Ten offers to mostly looking at MAC schools and saying West Virginia's in his top group, but no plans to visit West Virginia. So that, raises a couple alarm bells as well. So I think for me in this class, running back's my biggest concern right now, which if you would have told me that a few months ago, I'd have thought you're crazy. But right now there doesn't seem to be a clear answer for that position.
Oh boy. Yeah, you're right. And again, that's how fluid and how volatile the situation is too. And again, I mean, just two 19, 20, 21-year-old kids who make up their mind to go and do something different that could totally change 6 months, 8 months worth of work. And then all of a sudden you're really scrambling at the finish line here. Real quick. One more on recruiting here. The weekend, it's like veiled in mystery. What happens? Where do they eat? What do they do? They have a basketball game. They typically show up for like half of it and they go somewhere else. So there's activities, but I sent you a picture last week of the way they had everything staged, kind of made it like a red carpet event. Actually, I guess like a gold and blue carpet event with, the velvet ropes and the balloons. So when you walk in, you feel like you're important. And they really do try to make you feel important here. But as best as you know from talking to players, what do they do? What does it look like? What matters that West Virginia is doing well that does impress these kids?
Mike, first off, did you get approval for those pictures? And did you make sure before you sent them to me if that was okay?
I'll have to lock my social media.
So when they first get there, sorry, you lost me there for a second. When they first get there,
sneak that in there under the radar.
I know they're greeted by just about everybody. and they get a tour, they meet their host, they get the facilities that first night, Friday night, and this is for official visits. It varies from week to week depending on what's going on. Obviously, last week there was no home basketball game. This week there is. Friday night, out with the guys, having fun, checking things out. They stay at a hotel there in town. I will not tell you guys which one because there are some of you I cannot trust with that information. And then Saturday morning, they get up, lots of tours, facility, academics, meeting with advisors, anybody they need to talk to. And then Saturday afternoon, they get to the game. And they will, as you mentioned, they'll be there for the first half of the game is typically how it goes. And then around halftime, they'll head out and begin the rest of their visit weekend, which I know a lot of people have always asked, I bet so-and-so enjoyed that last-minute win. What was that, Kansas, I think, last year or a couple years back and in the final seconds. And I said, not a single one of those recruits saw that. Not a single one, because they all left at halftime. They always do. And after that, for the official visit weekends, what's changed is this year, they kind of host everything at the stadium. They have a big cookout, photo shoot. They, I know for the early official visits. Now, I don't know if it's they're going to deem it too cold now to do this, but for the early official visits back in the summer, they set out tables all the way across the football field, right around the 50-yard line, had food everywhere. All the coaches, staffers, visitors, family members, all there, all eating, all listening to music, all having a good time. Just a big kind of family reunion party type atmosphere. And I think that really clicked with a lot of those guys back in the summer. That's why a lot of those guys ended up committing. And they're still at the stadium on Saturday night. They're still doing dinner over there. I'm not sure that they're doing it out on the field just because of the temperature this time of year. But then they finish that up Saturday night, go out again with their hosts, the players. And then Sunday morning, it's kind of an exit interview. I think this is when you see a lot of either full-on commitments or kind of, hey, I'm going to go home and talk with my family, because the recruits come in and they sit down with Neil Brown. They sit down with their position coach or coordinator, and they talk about things. They talk about the weekend. They talk about their recruitment. They talk about what's next. And they stagger it out. It's really a lot of work. You know, all these guys that put in this work to plan it all out, because they stagger their departure time so that Neil Brown and the assistant coaches can each get individual time with these kids before they leave. So you'll see kids start leaving at 9, 10 a.m., and then the next one will leave at 11, next one at 11:45, 12:30, so that each one gets their time with Brown, and then they head on home and talk things over with their family. So it's kind of a jam-packed 48 hours. That is the limit per the NCAA. Very rarely does it get to the full 48 hours, just because, you know, you got to make a flight. So very rarely is that flight going to be around 48 hours. But it's a busy weekend, and the kids are usually worn out, and then they got a lot to think about afterwards.
You think?
And then they get 15 phone calls from me and 10 other reporters too. So
well, here's what we don't know about them, because last week, this is kind of funny for me from 1,000 miles above here, but like, I believe it was Blake Seiler had a let's go tweet, which is typically like the bad signal for a kid is committed and nothing happened. And people are wondering, like, is it the Darius Stills news? Is it the fact they have a really good weekend? A preferred walk-on long snapper did commit, but are we doing that for, like, I don't know. So that was weird too. But I also feel like there's no accidents and there's nothing that is not coordinated when it comes to their social media and their recruiting too, which makes me think that like, they might have some grand plan for rolling commitments for people who do, or they might say, no, save it till the 18th, keep it quiet. Do you have any feel for how they will handle or coordinate good news?
I don't. And that is something that schools do. I'm not sure how they'll handle it. A lot of times I get the impression from this staff that they are a player's kind of coaching staff and a recruits kind of coaching staff. Like, they don't want to try to influence the players or the recruits at all about when to make their decisions. But that is something that schools and coaches do. And I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's a very good thing if the recruit feels comfortable with it. And what you're talking about with like the rolling commitments, and you'll see them do it, is convince visitors. It's like, hey, if you guys are going to commit, let's have all of you commit tomorrow, you know, and we'll just do it one after another, after another, after another, and we will be the talk, you know, West Virginia football will be the talk of college football. Five commits in one day. Who's red hot right now? It's a real thing. It is something that colleges do. It is very rarely is it, I don't want to say authentic, like it's not natural. It's kind of orchestrated, but they're not forcing these kids into those decisions, just kind of trying to shape when they announce it.
Can't wait. Never thought I'd be so excited to see what kids do on Twitter and Instagram, but like I feel like there's like a synchronization there that's going to be fun to watch, and hadn't really gone down this road with this crew yet. So I don't know. So it's a weird little pleasure, I guess. I'm kind of oddly looking forward to. I don't know. Maybe I should get used to this. But hey, let's shift to basketball really quickly here. No longer undefeated, no longer number one in the RPI. I don't think there's a whole lot to be discouraged about, apart from the fact that they just didn't win the game, but played pretty poorly. Lost by two, had a chance, blew up a final possession, did so many things wrong that if they had done a lot wrong as opposed to a whole lot wrong, they still win the game. But Huggins kind of saw it coming. Bad practices, bad habits. They got a little bit too up. I don't want to say it's good for them, but I think there's some look in the mirror stuff. And there were some players who were saying, now we realize what they were saying. We're not as good as we think we are. And again, two winnable games, maybe three winnable games. They can get back on track. But I sense no panic, right?
No, I don't think so. I think, like you mentioned, so much of that I feel like was self-inflicted. I looked it up at that time. How often, or when was the last time that the team had committed 20-some turnovers, 20 turnovers, and shot less than 50% from the free throw line? Because as hard as that is to believe, that's exactly what happened. It's been 20 years. 20 years since that has happened. Jeez. And that's what they did on Saturday, along with several other mistakes. And then, you know, the questionable call at the end, and then to only lose by two on the road in a hostile environment. Let's not get too homerific here and say I'm encouraged. This is great. It shows how good they really are that they can screw up that much and only lose by two in that situation. But it's not something that to kind of worry about as far as the year goes on. It does raise some eyebrows about the protecting the ball security. Some of those decisions were just horrible, which you kind of want to watch to make sure it doesn't become a trend, and especially in these games coming up that, like you said, should be wins. But are they still going to make some of these kind of dumb mistakes, these bad passes? And also some of the free throw shooting. A lot was made about how Derek Culver can all of a sudden shoot free throws when he did not do so well last year. Sometimes, you know, you regress towards the mean, and that's what happened on Saturday with him and a few others as well. So we need to figure out where they are on that, who you can trust with the free throws. But big picture, no, it's not that discouraging.
I think I said this before in here, but I've heard from people that he's not a good free throw shooter. Like this 80%, yeah. This 80% thing was like an aberration, and like, hey, don't knock it. Let's see how long it goes. And you kind of wondered like, when are we going to gravitate back to the norm here? And maybe that was it too. But I feel weird saying no panic, but we're coming off a 21 loss season where everything went bad on the floor and off the floor. And all the talk has been about how that won't happen again. And I think there's an awful strong buy-in there. But I think people are reactionary to when they see so many things they saw coming about this team, that maybe those hunches were fed by what they witnessed last year, that the first sign of trouble this year, you think, oh boy, here we go again. Or, oh man, this may go bad. And that's why I think the schedule is really friendly to them, because they can get good feelings again on stuff. But just kind of revisiting the games, you know, some things have lasted a little bit. I just keep coming back to the one thing that Huggins said, and as soon as he said it, like, we kind of looked around the room like, oh, that won't come back to bite him, right? But we have so many shooters that they can't possibly all be bad at once. it's kind of happened. Like, as soon as he said that, you're like, oh, no. But you just see certain things, and, like, you're shooting about 40% from the year, and you're low 30s from three, and you're playing four guards and trying to find one that works from the perimeter. It's hard to do. And that's been, again, I don't want to say a concern or issue because you're 7-1, but that's been a thing just to track for the first seven games, is that, you know, how do they work out the backcourt? Because, you know, there's a lot of players there and there's not a lot of minutes. And that's a position where, you know, McNeil can't make threes from the bench, and he can't make a lot of threes if he's not getting a lot of playing time. But you also can't play, you know, 12 people if you're going to lean on one guy for a lot of minutes too. It just feels like to me they got to find their third guard first and then figure out what to do the other three guys. And that might be a competition all the time. But it's just a strange dynamic that I think you can understand why they're 7-1. It's not bad. They're good. They've weathered some close games and some competitive back and forth. They lost one. That's fine. But I think you kind of seen some common traits in all those close calls too.
So have you come back around on your eighth man and your eight man rotation, and you're going to go with McNeil like me, like your smart counterpart?
I think he made the move for sure.
There we go.
You know, Harler missed some shots that he's got to make, and McNeil had the same shots and more difficult shots and did it. I'm not a fan of McNeil's defense yet. I think he's got the ability to get there. I think Harler's a pretty good defender and he helps a lot. I think Harler scores in more ways. I don't think he scores more. And I think when you look at streaks, McNeil's streakiness is more positive than Harler's, and Harler's can go in the wrong direction sometimes too. We've seen him miss bad shots in a row. So I don't know. It's something to keep an eye on. Again, how did I feel on December 4th is different than I felt on December 8th. So that's kind of the point of the exercise there too. I'll tell you what my favorite thing about this team is though. There's no secret. Like, we spent last basketball season going, oh my gosh, you know, what's going on off the floor? Why aren't these guys playing? What's up with this guy's knee? You know, do they really hate each other? Why did they get kicked off the team? Like, there were so many things that you didn't know that were obviously plaguing this team. And when we watched the football team in the fall, you know, why can't they run the ball? You know, what type of defense are they in? Just stuff that we didn't understand and we didn't know that was causing the team trouble. And you could extrapolate all different examples from football and basketball in the past two seasons here. But what we're watching in basketball, I really think is exactly what's happening. They're having a hard time figuring out how to play Culver and Shibuya. Their guard situation is messed up right now. The guys that they're really relying on to shoot and score are not shooting well and scoring. They're trying to figure out how to play 12 guys where that's hard to do. It just seems like it's obvious to me. It's kind of fun to say, oh, okay, I can't coach this team, but I can certainly understand what's going on.
I agree with you. I'm interested to see the adjustments that the coach, Bob Huggins, makes over these next couple of games, because I do feel like you that it seems pretty obvious the issues. So I'm curious how he's going to fix them, because a couple of these things may not be just, hey, snap your fingers and fix it. You got to put it out there and figure out who is that guard, who is that third and fourth guard that you got coming off the bench. And I'm not sure here's a clear-cut answer, so I'm curious to see how things go over the next month.
It's just so hard, too, because you get these games you should win. Austin Peay, Nicholls State, Youngstown State. Ohio State's number three. That's going to be basically a road game. Kansas is a road game. And Oklahoma State is a road game. That's rough. So if you're not careful here, you know, you're looking at like 10-4, and then you come back. Yeah, you come home, and you got Texas Tech, and it's like Texas Tech doesn't have the same skill that it probably had going to the Final Four. They still play as hard as anybody from what I've seen too. So it doesn't get easier. So it just feels like that, you know, the sand on the hourglass is kind of slipping through here, and that, you know, they have some time to actually figure some things out and some games to do it. But they really can't mess around in those games either too, because you have three more to come and you have a lot of practice time in between. But I just don't know where they begin. Like, are you really working on high-low stuff to get Culver and Shibuya together? Do you go back to bringing Culver off the bench? Because that worked really well that one game. Because it just spread out the minutes a little bit and you weren't congested as much of those two. There's pretty clear issues when those two are sharing the space together and it doesn't work quite as well. And that does seem to be a way that you can get them both going at the same time in the same game. If they're not on the floor at the same time, then you can eventually get them together. But and then again, who's your third guard? Also, who's your point guard? Because McCabe maybe had an ankle injury he was dealing with, but that's the thing that we're seeing. And we understand, like, he's not playing. That's the thing. He's doing something wrong. And I guess the debate there is, all right, we don't understand why he's not playing. I think there's a pretty entertaining debate to be had about whether he is or is not good, right? It's kind of like an inkblot test. You know, you see what you want to see there, but he starts and he doesn't play very long, even when you think he may be playing well. But if he's playing well, he's going to stay in. Therefore, he's not doing something right. So what is it? That's kind of a weird thing, too, just to watch and you figure out what's going on here. And that's stuff they really got to get figured out fast. And I don't know which one you begin with or where you go, but it's really upon the players and I guess the guy who's pulling the strings to figure this out and to really make the most of these next, you know, 2 weeks.
McCabe, 12 minutes, 4 assists, led the team in assists. Again,
Didn't look good, though.
Bad on defense, had a couple turnovers, including one just egregiously bad pass. Is that not what you knew you were getting that when you signed up for him, right? Like, you knew that you were going to get, say, 10 assists, but at least, you know, a couple turnovers and a couple just horrendous passes that, you know, just defy fundamentals and are going to drive Bob Huggins crazy. I think we all knew that when he was in high school, right?
Yeah. And I don't know. It does seem teams don't mind to back the ball out and drive against him or even Sherman, McNeil to some extent, Harler. But now we're naming all the guards to play. So is it really McNeil's fault? I mean, like, it does seem like that. Haley and McBride are good at staying in front of guys. And they're a little bit bitter, a little bit bigger, a little bit longer. They can do that. But even with the two big guys or even like the one big guy under the basket, teams are pretty confident they can straight line this team. Depressing.
Yeah.
Didn't mean it to be. Well, let's wrap up here. I'm gonna cast here for a second, Chris. We've talked about holiday travel for people. Time in the car, kids, everybody's got Bluetooth or a way to connect to the radio, podcast season and different things that we've talked about, how we can fill people's commute hours or their nagging in-laws and family hours, whatever you want to do, but a way to fill a half an hour or 45 minutes in episodes. We have a couple, but I'm always intrigued by what other people want to hear or read too. So, hey, if you're going to be driving somewhere and you want to have something entertaining to listen to, if you've got a theme or an idea that you want to see us explore, let us know. Comment below on the board here. We have a few ideas, I think. Mm-hmm. Certainly you have more. And I don't really listen to this very often, so it's not for me as much as it is for you all. So if you have ideas, please pepper us with suggestions, and we can make your over the river and through the woods a little bit more enjoyable, I hope.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally have like a million great ideas. I just don't want to share them right now. So feel free to share yours, though, and we'll be glad to talk about it.
All right. We'll begin as soon as we wrap up, which is right about now. So hit us with some suggestions. Pay attention to what's coming up. As Chris has previewed previously, he will have some recruiting news and information coming out. I will continue my work wrapping up football and unwrapping basketball as we get closer and closer to, I guess, the end and the beginning for both these teams here. So that is all for this time. We will see you next time. I am Mike Casazza.
And I'm Chris Anderson.
We'll talk to you later.